much, Asaf. Thank you for the introduction. And just to say that I'm an incredible admirer of the work that you do, you and Alex, the organization. It is so important, it is so scholarly, and it works. And that is truly what counts. So thank you for everything that you do. Let me just start off with a short introduction. I do want to leave as much time for Q&A as possible, so I think I will do this in under 20 minutes. But essentially, Impact SE was established 20 years ago to monitor textbooks in the MENA region. And you know, the question is always asked, why textbooks? Textbooks in the MENA region are not like in the US or in Europe. That is to say, teachers do not have the kind of choices in this region that they have in the Western world, where there is a curriculum and, you know, several books are on the curriculum. They can choose to teach any one of them or actually none of them and their own course. This is different here. Apart from Israel, there is, as a rule, one book for each course for each year. And so, you know, it's incredibly centralized, and it is centralized by the state. The state decides what goes in the textbooks that young people in the MENA region are studying. And that makes them really powerful because they are so authoritative. You know, young people are receiving information from so many sources, so many media, but textbooks they understand come from the state. It is the word of the state. They usually have the seal of the state on them. And this means they can be an incredible, powerful barrier to radicalization. That is to say, you know, if a textbook says peacemaking is the way to resolve conflict, it does mitigate the acting out of hateful acts. But of course, they have this incredible power to radicalize as well. You know, one of the first things that ISIS did when they rolled into Mosul was change the textbooks. And there was a reason they did that. They understood how important they were. And so just looking at the textbook landscape, you know, across the region, if you like. And I think it's fair to say that there are some, you know, really good changes happening. There was a realization within the Arab world that textbooks need to be moderated. It is no good for them, and it's no good for the people who are, you know, in the schools who are being taught that the you know, the textbooks are teaching hate. And I will just do this introduction, and then I will show the PowerPoint. So, you know, just briefly, Jordan, King Abdullah changed the textbooks in 2014, following the 2004 Amman letter, 2005 Amman conference, taking out a lot of the hate that was in the Islamic studies. And, you know, those were Quranic verses, surahs and commentary hadiths. And he changed the objectionable ones for less objectionable ones, you know, for teaching of tolerance. Unfortunately, the changes haven't extended to the way that Israel is talked about, but certainly it has extended to the way Jews are talked about. And so, you know, that is a part of the pie. Obviously, we want the whole pie. In Tunisia, textbooks have been moderate for quite some time. They educate about the importance of negotiations, peace, respect for the other. Islam taught as a religion of peace. Past conflicts with Christianity and colonialism is not taught in a hateful way. In Morocco, King Mohammed VI is, we understand, in the process of changing textbooks. It's been a long process, but we do want to see the result of that. In Egypt, President al-Sisi has slowly made changes. Sadat let the Muslim Brothers write the textbooks. Big mistake, and that's not a mistake that al-Sisi is you know, wanting to happen going forward, and so he is making changes. Israeli textbooks, just so that you know, are considered to be very progressive in Israel. They promote peace with Palestinians. They talk about Palestinian cultural, religious, but also national identity and an abhorrence of war, of racism, gender equality, LGBTQ rights in the Israeli curriculum. You will be unsurprised to understand that it's not worse in the garden. The Iranian curriculum is actually getting worse, if that is at all possible. Textbooks are committed to a total struggle against the West, you know, the coming of the Mahdi as the Messiah, the establishment of the just world government, an obsession with Iranian hegemony in the region, the need for jihad, child martyrdom, fascination with Iranian imperialism. And the Syrian textbooks are bad in another sense. They are very Ba'athist. They barely talk about the importance of actually, you know, Syria and other nation states. It's a view of one pan-Arab state in the region, which includes, you know, Syria, Jordan, West Bank, Israel, they hope, Lebanon. And it was written during the Civil War, barely talks about the Civil War. Saudi Arabia, we reviewed this last year, and there's clearly an intent for positive change. We just are not seeing a great amount of positive change, and we are working with parties in order to get change there. But let me talk about the Palestinian curriculum, and I'm going to put this up and hope that everybody can see it. Is that visible?
Yes.
That is visible. Fantastic. Okay. So this is Abbas, who speaks at the United Nations. This was in 2018. This is the same speech that he gives, talking about continuing to spread the word of peace. They refuse to engage in violence. Now, what you need to know is that the Palestinians rewrote their curriculum over a period of 3 years. It started in 2014, ended in 2018, but they were rolled out 2016 grades 1 to 4, 2017 grades 5 to 10, 2018 the last two grades. They are, without a shadow of a doubt, in terms of radicalization, absolutely up there with the Iranian curriculum. And let me show you why. This is first grade, a reading exercise where the letter first grade six, the letter ha, the Arabic letter ha, is taught using the word shahid, martyr, and hujum, attack. The very, very first experience that Palestinian children get in school, they are immediately being taught about martyrdom and violence. In math grade four, they're being taught to add up the martyrs of the first intifada, martyrs of the second intifada. How many martyrs do you have? This is a Salafi idea, which one would not expect to see in the, if you like, nationalist Fatah driven PA curriculum. Martyrdom and jihad are the most important meanings to life. Essentially, the meaning of life is death. Grade three. And it's not a religious book, it's our beautiful language. It's a language study book. Israel does not appear on maps at all. So, you know, wiped off the map is literally accurate. There are dozens of maps across the 204 books in the PA curriculum. There is no appearance of Israel there. Israeli cities are characterized as Palestinian cities. And, this is a very visual idea of what the PA are doing, which is essentially saying to young Palestinians, there is one state, Palestine. It will be, it goes from the river to the sea, and it will be gained through violence, through jihad, through martyrdom. Here's an example, science, Newton's second law being taught through the use of a slingshot. But that's essentially saying, go endanger yourself. And young Palestinians are encouraged to do that. But the use of science to put this idea forward is a, very clear example of how intent the Palestinian Authority is to use this school curriculum to drive the will of young people to sacrifice themselves, to commit, these acts of violence, these acts of martyrdom. Anti-Semitic ideas, which have always been in the curriculum, are now back in. So Jews are the enemies of Islam who attempted to kill the Prophet. This is a hadith, which is essentially a commentary. It's not a surah. It's not directly from the Quran. And even if it was, one can choose what goes in and what doesn't go in. But to put this idea in is really clearly a hateful idea. Jews are liars and fraudsters. This actually is a surah. And a terrible one at that. The Munich Olympic massacre is striking at Zionist interests abroad. As you can imagine, when we show this to German diplomats, politicians, leaders, they are unimpressed by the fact that a curriculum which they are paying for, and I will talk about that in a minute, is being taught to these young people. The old saw about, you know, Shahids, martyrs receiving 72 virgin brides is in Islamic education grade 9, and girls, you know, they're not going to get the 72 virgin brides, but to be equal with the boys, they also need to kill and be killed. The idea that girls should also be martyrs is a key part of this curriculum. And there's a reason why Dalal Mughrabi is in, who you will all recall from the Coastal Road Massacre, is in this curriculum 5 times on 5 separate occasions. She appears in this curriculum. That is to essentially tell girls, you be like her. They even put a kafir on her. She didn't wear kafir. She was a communist, and yet they did that. And I think this is the last slide, but I think it's, you know, fairly meaningful. This is something which every single morning, nine-year-olds repeat this. It is a vow. They vow to sacrifice their blood to saturate the land of the generous, their word, and remove the usurper from the country and exterminate the remnants of the followers. Again, incredibly insightful language, which grade niners repeat regularly, in order to for that message to be inculcated, the idea that they are part of the struggle, and the Palestinian Authority will decide, when they will be used and when this will happen. I will attempt to close this without closing everything. There we go. You will forgive my not particularly good skill set when it comes to this kind of thing. So, you know, the question is, what do we do about it? As well as being a research institute, we are very involved in, you know, the policy and the education side of our work. The Europeans essentially pay for this curriculum. Why? Because they're paying for, you know, the teachers. And it's the teachers who write it, who teach it, and who are immersed in this curriculum. And there has been, you know, quite a lot of change in Europe over the last year in relation to it, because, you know, policy we've driven forward. First of all, it's not all about Europe. There's a bill going through Congress at the moment, HR 2343, the Peace and Tolerance in Palestinian Education Act. It was marked up. It went through unanimously the House Foreign Affairs Committee, which was, you know, quite interesting. And it's now, you know, waiting for the whole full House to vote on it. You'll obviously know better than I do that there is a logjam through. There needs to be a Senate companion bill, and what that says essentially is that American money cannot be used to fund this hateful curriculum. What's happening in Europe is more, if you like, in the weeds, because, as I say, they are intimately involved in the curriculum, European diplomats, governments, and so we are active in those places that count. They are the European Union, Norway, the UK, and Germany. The European Union passed legislation, I want to say 2 months ago now, which we have been, you know, driving through since the end of 2019. It went through the first committee and then, you know, finally went through the full plenary 2 months ago. And it says, again, our money, European money, cannot be used to teach hate. Now, when they say it, it has a real monetary value to it, if you like, because they're, you know, they're paying something like close to €1 billion a year to the PA, and a big chunk of that goes to education. So you know, that needs to be leveraged in November to go through the budgetary committee on the basis of the strength of the plenary vote. We went to Norway. Norway is the lead European country that is dealing with the Palestinians on their curriculum for two reasons. One, because they are big in foreign aid to the PA, but also two, because they consider themselves a leader in education. And so in the end of 2019, we convinced Parliament to say no more money until this curriculum is changed. But of course, it's a governmental, not a parliamentary action. And 1 month ago, the Norwegian foreign minister essentially publicly stated in response to a parliamentary question that they have frozen their funding to the PA until the curriculum changes. We're very active, obviously, in the UK Parliament because they are big, big payers to the Palestinian Ministry of Education, and in the Bundestag in Germany, where you know, we expect more from them. Of those places that I mentioned, the EU, Norway, the UK and Germany, Germany are the most recalcitrant in positive action, but we hope that eventually this November, through their budget committee, we will see action. And I'm just going to say one more thing. I think I'm within 20 minutes now, so just one more thing in relation to what's going on in the EU. We pushed Mogherini, who was, if you like, the European foreign minister, to all intents and purposes, she was vice president for foreign affairs, to create an EU review of the Palestinian curriculum. This is something which is happening now. We are, you know, clearly acutely aware of the importance of this and are making sure that the organization, the George Eckhart Institute, a German think tank, which is reviewing the Palestinian curriculum, that they are not allowed to whitewash the PA curriculum. And so we are throwing, you know, an enormous amount of our resources at making sure that that is not allowed to happen, working through parliaments, through governments, and we're going to be working through media in the next week or two. So with that, I will grind to a halt.
Awesome. Well, thank you for that impressive and everything you do. And of course, the comprehensive analysis of all the challenges vis-a-vis the textbooks, a topic that many of us have known as to be an ongoing problem, especially as it relates to the Israeli-Palestinian peace process. And, you know, something that, of course, has been going on since Oslo, now over 25 years ago, as far as what is actually happening vis-a-vis the incitement and what is actually happening all over the place, and obviously a topic that many of us are all concerned about, and trickles down, of course, here to what goes on in the academy. Many of us deal with, you know, of course, the issues regarding BDS, and that's an ongoing concern, you know, all these connections. Let me, first of all, at this point, let me, of course, open up the floor. Now, the floor is now open to as many questions. So again, as I said before, you have a question, please click on the hand icon and I'll be able to unmute you. And if you want to also type in your question, you can use the chat. We have a few questions already up. So let me try to start with Arnold Schwartz here and see if we can unmute Arnold. And ask his question. Arnold, can you hear us?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go ahead.
Number one, thank you so much for that very informative presentation. What I'd like to ask is, when you go beyond elementary and high school into the colleges, is that maintained and consolidated? Is that the same curriculum that is teaching the teachers?
It's a really good question. It involves so many moving parts. So I will try and divide them up. Firstly, philosophical. Once you have inculcated young people from grades 1 to 12 with this level of hatred, there, you know, your work is done, so to speak. And you know, I think that is the key thing. Now, you know, it's not the US, so there's not a great proportion of Palestinians who are going on to higher education. In fact, the majority don't even go on to grades 11 and 12. Those who do tend to go to Jordanian universities. Some, and this is where it gets interesting, are going now in dribs and drabs to the Hebrew University, doing a preparatory course first, which is worrying because they've been inculcated with all this hate. You know, in higher education, you are a lot less likely to find, you know, this kind of strategic education to hate in the majority of subjects. Clearly, you're going to find it in some. So, you know, if you're in a Jordanian university or a Palestinian university, Al Quds or you know, Hebron, you know, or any of those others, and you know, you are studying humanities, history, yes, well, you know, they hate teaching will absolutely continue. But if you're studying engineering in Al-Quds or in Amman, or, you know, around the Gulf. You know, as I say, the work has been done. When it comes to teachers, you know, that is, sorry, I just had one more thing. The Palestinians are very sophisticated at this. They do something very interesting. The final exam, what they call the Tawjia in Arabic, which is essentially matriculation, contains quite a high proportion of these hateful ideas. Even compared to the textbooks, there's quite a condensed amount of it. You know, we did a study on this about a year ago, and you know, we felt that it was a kind of graduation in hate. It was a absolute effort by the PA to make sure that when kids graduate high school, whether going on to higher education or not, they will have that graduation in you know, in these hateful ideas. So they're taking that with them. Teachers, you know, as I say, if they're going to teaching colleges in the West Bank, yep, they're going to, you know, continue to be radicalized. Also, you know, the student associations are radical, and you know, Hamas is radical inside the PAs, inside universities, you know, within the PA. And of course, this curriculum is being studied in Gaza. And so you can imagine that, you know, that there is, for those who are out of school, no end to the radicalization. So I guess the answer to the question is, yes, the radicalization continues, but you've been through 10 years of this, or 12 years of this, you know, the PA's job is done anyhow, and with a matriculation exam, they absolutely make sure that you are leaving with the ideas they want you to leave with. Does that make sense?
Yeah, thank you. Great. So let's go on to a few other questions here. So let me ask Alan, let me read Alan's question, who typed in. So he's typing here, in writing in, that in Israel, Jewish kids generally pick up the fear of the other, Arab citizens, whereas Arab kids generally pick up the fear of the other, meaning Jewish citizens. Each of them has a, you know, what he calls the boogeyman to fear. How does the education of Jewish kids influence how they see Arabs, you know, on the flip side from what you're talking about?
Yeah, really good question. And I agree, you know, clearly, and I'm a father of, you know, kids who, one of them is already in the army, the other one is in grade 10 in Israeli school. So I'm you know, acutely aware of, you know, their attitudes in relation to the bogeyman other, if you like. The difference is very clear. And that is, while PA schools go out of their way to demonize the Jewish other, the Israeli other, in all those ways which you know, you can see in our reports, the Israeli schools do the opposite. They are and have for several years now, since 2000 actually, so really 20 years, made a real effort to humanize the Palestinian other. Now, there is an argument about whether that's the internal Palestinian other, that is to say, you know, Palestinians or Israeli Arabs, as they actually prefer to be called, rather than Palestinians, or Palestinians living in the West Bank and Gaza. But still, that process is quite sophisticated, and it starts in Israeli schools, you know, at a young age, and you know, becomes more sophisticated as that time goes on. So it's not only about the, you know, the Arab other. It is also about the personalization of the Arab other. And these are two slightly separate ideas. There is, of course, you know, a UNESCO standard about respect for the other in textbooks, but respect for the individual other is the idea that engenders affection, you know, even love in that other. And the Israeli curriculum certainly meets the former. That is to say, there is a great deal of material about the Arab other, not just on a cultural level. So it's not just about, you know, Islamic and Christian festivals, lifestyles, but also on the national level, including the Nakba, which is discussed, and the word Nakba is used. That's why I'm using the word, because in an Israeli civics textbook published about 3 years ago, the Nakba is talked about, and Israeli children are told, you know, in 1948, 800,000 Arabs either left or were driven out. The Hebrew word yershu, were driven out discuss. There is contextual analysis clearly, but also Israeli children are asked to listen to a Palestinian narrative and to understand the Palestinian national narrative. But on the personalization side, there's a lot of material about, this is an Arab family, the mother was a lawyer, the father was a doctor. It's not all about Fadayin, which is, the myth that Israeli kids learn about Arabs as farmers for the, it's just nonsense. Lawyer, doctor, this kid just like you, same age, he, she likes to play video games, whatever. So this personal, it sounds a little bit, naive, but this personalization of the other is very much a part of the Israeli textbooks. Compare with the Palestinian textbooks, which essentially teaches young people to demonize, or Jews and Israelis are demonized. They are taught to hate them, and it makes, the killing of them considerably easier.
Great, thank you for that. Let's go on to Charles's question here. Let me try to unmute Charles. Charles, can you hear us?
Am I there?
Yes, you are. Go ahead.
A comment and a question. First, the comment. Hate begins at home, long before kids are getting to school, teaching them to kill and maim because it's fun. So that's the comment. The question is, what are the other Arab countries doing in terms of their own education and feelings about Israel?
Thank you. Marcus?
Well, two massive questions. So to the first point, I'm not going to belabor that point. I mean, clearly you're right. The point about textbooks, though, and their uniqueness is their ability to mitigate hate, which is taught at home, which is taught family surrounds, which is taught in social media, and obviously this is key in the Arab world where social media is very powerful. Textbooks, because they're authoritative, as I said at the beginning, have this ability to act as a barrier to radicalization, to mitigate, to teach young people that hate which you might be hearing in the places is wrong, and this is why. And we are telling you because we are, if you like, the authority. And you need to trust authority. So that is the, that is, if you like, a short version of something which sociologists spend whole PhD theses talking about. To the second point, also, again, don't want to belabor the point, but as I said at the beginning, there's a mixed bag in the Arab world at the moment. You are getting countries which have made change. So that's Jordan. King Abdullah II has made change. As I said, he took out the offensive surahs, hadiths from Islamic education. And it all followed 9/11, actually. And there was a conference in Amman in 2005, which came before the letter, the Amman letter, which was written to discuss the need to change attitudes of young people, and textbooks were specifically talked about. So by 2014, there was this rewrite, which is now fairly completed. And as I say, Israel is still attacked. We want change there. We would love to speak to the Jordanians about it. At the moment, they're not speaking to Israelis. But on the Islamic studies side, there isn't the hatred of Jews, which we've seen before. So there, positive change. Again, King Mohammed VI in Morocco is supposed to be going through this process. Al-Sisi is making slow changes, which he says is for the good of Egypt. He actually says, we want a warm peace with Israel, not just peace with Israel. This is in a history geography textbook. We want a warm peace with Israel for Egypt's own strategic interests. Really important, really interesting. Again, Saudi, they need to try harder. And, we are very much on that. And we hope to see changes in September 2020. There are some places we can't do anything about it. Iran, Syria, those textbooks are appalling. And, we can neither have conversations with them, like we can with the Saudis, nor can we bring the wrath of the international community to bear, like we can with the PA. So they're going to continue to do what they're doing. But I think this is the big point. you know, at any one school day, there are literally hundreds of millions of Muslims, many of whom Arab, but, you know, in the greater Muslim world, who are being taught to hate Jews and Israel. And of those, there are many, many opportunities to change those textbooks. First of all, they need to be reviewed empirically, academically, a report being written. And then decisions need to be made about what it will take to drive change so that the next generation in that particular country is not taught to hate Israel and Jews. And, you know, I would imagine everybody in this call is absolutely aware, you know, that people, that young people in these countries become adults and they have these prejudicial, awful, hateful attitudes because that's what they were taught in school. And by the way, Europe as well. I mean, clearly it's not the same. But, you know, there are textbooks in France, Belgium, Italy, the UK, which, you know, which are not very helpful either. However, there is a massively far cry from that and what is being taught in Malaysia, in Indonesia, as we said, across the Maghreb and, you know, some places in the Gulf, although, you know, we're hoping for improvement there, Lebanon, the Hezbollah books, etc. So, you know, there's a lot to bite into there. And it is a generational change that we are after, and it will take a generation to get there. But, you know, slowly but surely, what is the end game? The end game is that these hundreds of millions of people will not be taught in school to hate Israel and Jews. And that is not as difficult as it seems. It is a matter of removing hateful material and putting intolerant material. It's not rocket science.
Great. Thank you. And let's that's a good segue to Diane's question, which is actually may or may not be in the wheelhouse of what you guys are doing per se. But obviously, you know, there's also been a big concern in American world textbooks here in the States. And we've seen, you know, I'm sure you've read of late of what has been happening with the ethnic studies, for example, in California. There's a lot of issues as far as where Middle East experts and Islamic experts, you know, or, you know, so-called, for that matter, are influencing textbooks in American schools when it comes to world history and the language that is used there. And so Diane is really asking, you know, I'm kind of surmising her question, you know, how do we, you know, impact those issues when it comes to looking at that? And of course, obviously, I'm adding here the influence of what's happening, you know, with the work you're doing, and of course, how that trickles down into Western civilization classes here and world history classes that we talk about in the U.S. and in Europe at large.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know, you know, Asaf, we've had conversations about this before, how there is a meeting in relation to this work. Yes, there is an enormous amount of work to do in the US and in Europe. And actually, there is a connection. There are some of these large global publishers like Pearson who are, you know, publishing in across Europe and into the US all at the same time. It's a different battle though. Although the principle is the same. The principle is, you know, if you're teaching young people in Massachusetts or in California, in Newton or you know, in LA, hateful, terrible things about Israel, one-sided ideas, then young people in the United States, where you live, are going to become adults who have been inculcated with these, you know, terrible ideas. So the principle remains the same. The fight back is different. The fight back is, you know, clearly what is happening, which is people who are involved, who are working with on the state level, with you know, with the educational people who are working on the school board level, and who are. And I think this is key, working with the publishers, and this is why it's different, to point out material which is erroneous, hateful, inaccurate, and to demand change. And there's definitely been success there, you know, but clearly it's a tough battle, especially, you know, with the ethnic studies, which you allude to, which I think is the, you know, the California instance. There is a UNESCO derived standard of peace and tolerance, which is historical accuracy. They are respect for the other, for the individual other, no hate, peacemaking is the way to resolve conflict, gender equality, economic prosperity, and historical accuracy. And I think this is really important, and this is where the fight back can and should be, if you like, put within the context of that which is acceptable globally. And these, say what one likes about UNESCO, and there's an enormous amount to say about UNESCO. Over the years, they have created certain standards, and we can use them. We can leverage them, and we do. So a standard of historical accuracy, which presents what happens in 1948 in an entirely inaccurate way, in a textbook which is being taught in Houston, Massachusetts, or in LA, there's something to work with there. It's not just a subjective view of a Jewish organization in Massachusetts or in California saying, hey, we have a problem. There is an objective standard here. That objective standard is a UN standard, and it is being breached by the educational people in California and by particular publishers. And working on the basis of that with empirical evidence, that's the way to fight back. Otherwise, it just becomes a he said, she said, and that's not effective. Effective is empirical research, UNESCO standards, and pushing back using scholarship.
Great, thank you. Alex, do you want to chime in for I have a question here?
Sure. First, let me say thanks for a fascinating presentation. Some of this is familiar to those of us who are working on these issues, but a lot of it isn't, and it's always useful and dismaying to be brought up to date on where things stand now. And that brings me to my question, which is really, what are the, in your view, the historical trends in Palestinian textbooks? These issues have been brought up periodically since the 1960s, including in the U.S. Congress. And I'm wondering whether you could give a very thumbnail on 1 foot sketch of the last couple of generations of textbooks. Are there changes in tone, in emphasis, or has it been consistent and hostile throughout?
Really interesting. So I think you've got to split it up into until 2000 and after 2000. Until 2000, the Palestinians were essentially in the West Bank studying Jordanian books, in the Gaza Strip studying Egyptian books, and they were they were awful in their own unique way. Now 2000, as a result of Oslo, as a result of the handing over of civil rule to the Palestinians, that included education and the Ministry of Education. That handover happened obviously in the 1990s. By 1997, the education ministry was up and running. 2000, first curriculum came out, and it wasn't great. But it wasn't as bad as the one now. And then you saw ups and downs. So for instance, after Arafat died, and when Abu Mazen took over, and before Hamas took over in Gaza, so that really, tiny window of opportunity somewhere around 2006, there was a real improvement in the Palestinian textbooks. They started talking about Jewish rights in Jerusalem, Jewish continuity over historical biblical Jewish presence in the land of Israel, and a current presence which is legitimate. It was really interesting. And then slowly but surely it kind of went pear-shaped. Hamas took over in Gaza. These books, as I said, are also taught in Gaza. There was clearly pressure to make them a little bit more radical. And then, there's an ever flow of awfulness. And, exactly as you say, Alex, people have been talking about this for years now. But the big, big change, and the important change was, this new curriculum. And I think this is, this is the most important thing. There was a watermark, if you like, in 2014. when the Palestinians said, okay, we're completely rewriting our curriculum. And everyone said, hey, that's great. You know, there was going to be change. We understand it's mainly pedagogical. And the Europeans got really excited. They got involved. The Japanese got involved in teaching science. Why? Can't really say, but they did. By the way, we presented the way the science has been radicalized to the Japanese, and they were utterly horrified. But in, you know, so there was this period from 2014 to 2016 when there was, you know, a degree of optimism. We're going to get something good, something new. Obviously, we're going to see, you know, a Palestinian national narrative. They're not going to be in love with Israel. But on the other hand, they're not going to be demonizing Israel either. And they're going to recognize that, you know, they have a peace treaty with Israel, that there is a thing called, you know, Oslo. And the reason they're teaching kids is because of Oslo. And, you know, there needs to be an expression of that. The result was shocking. The first tranche, which came out in 2016, that grades 1 to 4 tranche, young kids, was really shocking. The idea that you can radicalize kids at the age 6, 7, 8, and 9 like that in a to a greater extent than anything we'd seen before was different. And then the biggest mass of books came out between in 2017, and that was it. From that point, this was a strategy. The Palestinian Authority had made a strategic decision to turn against peace, against any idea of cooperation, except on a fairly basic level with Israel. But on the other hand, take European money to radicalize children. And so, you know, this is what we're saying to the Europeans all the time. You believe in a two-state solution. You are in this game, in this Israeli-Palestinian endless game, because you say, you know, you want a two-state solution. The Palestinians aren't teaching it. You won't see any mention of the two-state solution in the Palestinian curriculum. There is one cursory mention of the Oslo Accord with a doctored version of the Arafat letter, which takes out coexistence with Israel. It's just not there. And, you know, so again, we say to the, you know, we say to the Europeans, what is the point? What is the point in you believing something, the Palestinians telling you they believe in the same thing, and then here is the proof that actually they don't, and they're not teaching their kids that either. And so that was a tipping point with Mogherini as well. So, Alex, I guess the answer to the question is there have been many iterations. There have been, you know, it's been rumbling the whole time. But from 2016 to now, the last 4 years has been seminal because brand new curriculum, more radical than ever, taking more European money than ever, and not even a pretense of wanting anything but a state gained through jihad, ribat, which is, you know, terrorism, martyrdom, sacrifice of young people, and everybody.
Great. Great. Thank you for that. Alex, a follow-up to that or continue on to the next question?
No, give someone else a chance, please.
All right, all good. Let me read Eric's question here, and this is a little bit, you know, going to the next level, which is, of course, you know, an important level, which is, of course, the Palestinian education on the streets. You know, what's happening as far as, how, you know, TV, media, plazas named after, you know, suicide bombers and whatnot. What we call here, you know, obviously in the age of infotainment, you have obviously the Palestinian infotainment that plays into the cultural element. Is there something that can be influenced there? Obviously, you know, and to your point about Oslo, back in the Oslo years, one of the, you know, obviously the ongoing demands was to change the incitement in the textbooks, in the mosques, and the cultural environment. If you can talk a little bit about that also, you know, I guess from your division, you know, pre 2000, I guess, in a post 2000, if that's the categorization of how you want to kind of look at that aspect as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, yeah. So, I mean, I'm not sure the division works there, only insofar as, you know, throughout the 90s, there was, you know, Arafat essentially, I think we can all agree, was a unreconstructed terrorist who, you know, signed a document which he had absolutely no faith and belief in, the you know, the Oslo Accords. And, right. You know, although we all clung desperately throughout the 1990s to the idea that it'll all be okay, it was never going to be okay. And so the squares, the, you know, the public manifestation of hate was there, if you like, before the Palestinians even had their own textbooks for proper in 2000. But the and that continues to this day. But the question is, where's your leverage? You know, can you, it is a lot easier to leverage on the fact that Dalal Mughrabi is mentioned in the Palestinian textbooks five times than it is to get a square in Jenin named after Dalal Mughrabi changed, because, you know, it's a, there is no direct connection between this square in Jenin and funding. And the Palestinian Authority, at the end of the day, is a, you know, it's a donee state. They, you know, do extremely well, taking as much money as they possibly can from global sources, the Europeans, other Arab states, Japanese, etc. And, you know, the textbooks are different because there you see the direct link. There is no direct link between, you know, awfulness on Palestinian television, awfulness in the plethora of Palestinian media, you know, of which there is tons, or a, you know, or a square, but there isn't a textbook because the Europeans pay the Palestinian Ministry of Education, they pay the salaries of the teachers, essentially pay them 100% every penny. And so there's the leverage. Therefore, yes, that hate in the street is there. And yet, you know, there is at this moment in time no leverage on it. There is at this moment in time leverage on the textbooks. Now imagine a world when, you know, Israelis and Palestinians were, I mean, frankly, I don't think I can at the moment, but, you know, let me paint a picture of an imaginary world where, you know, Israelis and Palestinians are back in the 90s, you know, negotiating Oslo, then absolutely, as Asaf says, you know, within the Oslo Accords, there is, you know, very clear ideas about incitement. You can say, ah, yes, what about the square? But that's, you know, an imaginary world. In this real world where we are now, the leverage is on the textbooks.
Great, thank you for that. And obviously, you know, there's a lot to be done there. Let me ask, you know, with, just being cognizant of the time, I will give my friend Steve Landis his last question. And obviously, this is not a you know, not a short. There are no short answers to any of these questions, but obviously, it concerns that all of us and trends that all of us are seeing. You know, going back, of course, to, you know, American universities, and you know, we've had a lot of issues here, and I'm sure you're aware of the latest conversation about Title VI, you know, as it relates to, you know, the indoctrination in Middle East study centers and across North America, which are getting federal funding. We're seeing some movement here, just by way of background, as a result of the Ministry of Education now, the Department of Education, our friends and colleagues like Ken Marcus, who have been cracking down legally on some of these cases that we're seeing. But are you seeing, and have you found, I guess, you know, I'll add to Steve's point, are you seeing a linkage between the kind of textbooks that you're seeing in Palestinian textbooks being used here in the States? I mean, we've exposed, and I will say this, you know, I'll add here, you know, a personal note. I mean, I exposed back in 2004, there was a case study where there was a Fulbright scholar who was a member of Hamas who taught at Florida, at a Florida university, and was writing textbooks, you know, for Hamas in his area. And of course, he was teaching Islamic studies at a Florida university. Obviously, there was not, you know, a very far connection about the kind of materials he was using. Are you seeing those kind of linkages? And I guess, of course, those are issues that, you know, needs to be exposed.
So, I mean, three things. First of all, you guys are amazing in the work that you do in U.S. higher education. And, you know, really God's work. If that is not done, I dread to think what the next generation of, you know, Middle East scholars in the US are going to turn out to be. So keep on fighting that fight. Insanely important. One.
Thank you for the kind word. It's an uphill battle. Yes.
Without a doubt. But you're doing it with chokhmah. No question about it. Two, is there a linkage? Definitely. You know, there are people teaching in American universities who got their school education through these textbooks. And you know, that is as much linkage as you know one you know could imagine. That is what they know, what they have been taught, what they were brought up with. But I think three is the more interesting element, which is how to, you know, if you like, leverage what we know about the Palestinian curriculum. It is the Achilles heel of the Palestinian Authority, because it's undeniable. There are 204 books which we have reviewed, you know, each and every one of them. And it tells a story of, you know, this strategy of radicalizing 1.3 children every single school day to sacrifice themselves for the Palestinian Authority. Now, you know, what I know from the Europeans is when that is presented to, you know, a Danish socialist, you know, he or she is horrified by this idea and that their taxpayer money is being used for this, because that's not what they want their children to be taught, and it's certainly not what they want Palestinian children to be taught. I can't see that it should be any different for, you know, American liberals, American progressives. One would have to imagine that with all the garbage that they consume about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, how much do they know about this element, the clear strategy of the Palestinian Authority, what it says about what they really want, which is this one state from the river to the sea, what it says about, you know, how they are prepared to sacrifice their children so banally, so easily. And, you know, educating those who can be educated about the Palestinian curriculum, I think, you know, should be very powerful in US higher education. Do people in departments of education in US universities know that this is what the Palestinians are teaching their children? Do they think that is reasonable? You know, I can count on the fingers of one hand in the, I don't know how many meetings that I've had over the last, you know, 4 years. You know, people assume that, you know, that progressives are going to say, well, what do you expect? But they don't. They don't say, what do you expect? It has happened very occasionally. I tell them what I expect. I expect there are 150 conflicts going on around the world. This is a, you know, frankly, a one fairly Mickey Mouse conflict. And I expect that in all of those 150 conflicts, including in Israeli schools and in Palestinian schools, children are taught peacemaking is the way to resolve conflict. Children are taught to respect the other. Children are taught not using hate. These are UNESCO standards. This is what everyone has signed up to. That is what I expect. What do they expect?
Great. Well, thank you for that. And really, you know, I want to thank you for all the work you guys are doing. You know, and it's always a pleasure to find ways to work together with you, Marcus. And of course, we are, you know, we're always here to help out on our end here in the U.S. and North America. So, you know, I want to thank you again for taking the time to talk to us. You know, there's a lot to be discussed on these matters, and these are one of the critical kind of low-hanging fruit issues that need to be addressed. And so, you know, thank you for all your work. My pleasure. I'm cognizant of our time, and unfortunately our time is short today. So I really, I want to thank everybody again for joining us this afternoon. I want to thank Marcus. I want to thank Alex. We will obviously continue the conversation. I know there were more questions. If we did not get to your question today, please feel free to email us at bdsmonitor@spme.org, bdsmonitor@spme.org. And we will do our best to answer those questions later on. We will obviously post this conversation later on and of course continue the conversation. Marcus, thank you again for joining us this afternoon. You know, your time is already evening in Israel, so I guess thank you for taking away from your dinner time. As always, we will continue these conversations. My blessing during these days is, of course, I hope everybody stays safe and healthy. And this is something that we will continue doing, and we will look for more ways to collaborate with Impact C going forward. So thank you again, and have a great day.
Thank you, Asaf. Be well.
Take care.